Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Austin Healy and this is the Rugby Tonight podcast. Joining me in the studio today is a fellow former giant of rugby.
I'm not shrinking.
England giant, Ben Kay. And it's fair to say we have not had the greatest weekend as two former
England internationals.
Well, daughter didn't win the national netball finals.
No.
Had to stop at pocket money.
I was over in Rome watching the huge game of Scotland-Italy in
the weekend.
So I didn't see anything else that happened. Anything of any interest?
I didn't watch any of the other weekend.
Good.
Moving on, it's going to be a pretty short podcast,
yeah.
Isn't it? Aside from begrudgingly looking at England's miserable Six Nations, here's a look at what else we've got coming up in a Ireland-centric show.
We were joined by Australia's head coach, Michael Checker, in the studio.
We are lucky because we get to play New Zealand three times a year, you know what I mean? That's the way you improve.
And he wasn't alone as he was sat next to England's all-time most capped player, Jason Leonard, who had a few things to say about our efforts this year.
Hopefully this England team will learn from the games that they've lost in this Six Nations.
Now the Six Nations are over, we can also look ahead to the final five rounds of the Aviva Premiership season.
But before we get to any of that, we have some really sad news. Former New Zealand and Samoan international Dylan Mika sadly passed away suddenly on Tuesday at the age of just 45. All of us here at BT Sport and around the rugby world send our thoughts and condolences to Dylan's friends and family at this time. Okay, Ben, here we go. Let's discuss England's action at the weekend. But before we do, let's start with something a little bit more contentious. Spain versus Romania. Of which, I don't know what I'm talking about because I know there was some Romanian ref and
someone kicked off
24 penalties.
Sort of, no. So the game was between Spain and Belgium. The Rugby Europe, which is the governing body that dictates that sort of next tier down of European rugby, put in charge a Romanian referee and Romanian officials. The result of that match, though, dictated whether Romania would go straight into the World Cup qualification or whether Spain would. And as a result of Spain losing, they now have to take a shot in the qualification process, the next qualification process. So you can imagine that had there been any contentious decisions, the Spanish would have been a little bit upset. And 23 penalties against 8 and
24 penalties, I think, to not very many.
Eight,
four,
I think, was it?
Someone told me it was four.
Yeah,
and they lost 18-10. Isn't there an international court of arbitration for sport that could take it to?
I think World Rugby have actually said that they're going to look at it and they're going to review it, and it could be that they struck the result off. I saw someone had put a clip of all the penalties on. Now, the problem with breakdown, a lot of them...
Socks are down, laces undone, penalty, 3 points.
Don't call me ref or you'll be off. The problem is a lot of them came in and around the breakdown, and the problem with rugby as a whole is you can usually find a couple of decisions that a referee could give one way or the other. It just so happens that he seemed to give them all against Spain and towards Belgium, And with three officials, Romanian officials, it all looked a bit suspect. So I think it will get, I think it will get looked at, and I think it could well get struck off as a result.
Yeah, I heard the officials had to get out there quickly on that private Romanian jet they used to get back to Bucharest.
The players obviously remonstrated quite vociferously at the end with the referee as well, which we don't want to see. But put it into context, Spain were massive favourites to win that game fairly comfortably, having played so well in the previous games.
Okay, whilst we are rounding up on the news, before we obviously get to the big news of the weekend, Ireland's amazing Grand Slam, George Northgate. What do you know about George Northgate? Does it lead onto
green.
A stream? Does
it's
it
lead, green.
Is it in a field?
Yeah, and it's got George's house.
It's finally come
it.
To an end his dispute. He's returned to training and is now ready to play for Saints, which is fortunate, really, bearing in mind they're paying him about 15 grand a week.
Yeah, obviously, Dean Gaffney, we call it Dean or Alan Gaffney, he came out quite publicly and said that hadn't considered George North for selection in one of the down weeks between Six Nations games because he wanted to pick people that actually wanted to play for the club. So it turns out that the reason was George missed a training session. I'm pretty sure that George wouldn't have been overly keen to play for Northampton as the England players that are involved obviously get that weekend off to recover, and George wanted to play for Wales. So there was all sorts of speculation that he might return home early to Wales. He's obviously going there next season. I actually think, you know, maybe they could have come to an arrangement where he could have gone. It would have taken some of the financial strain off Northampton.
It would have been a better deal, wouldn't it, really? Because they've got nothing to play for. They can't make the top
exactly.
six.
But I don't
well,
think...
Well, they could in mathematically, but...
I don't think it's going to affect the relationship with George and any of the players to the end of the season, or the coaching staff. I think they'll just get on with it. He'll probably score a couple of tries, and let's hope that the fans remember him for the good times rather than this argument.
And then Cardiff, talking of Wales, Cardiff announced their new coach, John Mulvihill. Mulvihill? Mulvihill? How do you pronounce his surname?
Mulvihi.
It says Hill on the end.
Don't know.
I think it's Mulvihill.
It's been protracted, hasn't it, though? There's been all sorts of people mentioned that were going to Cardiff Blues. Jordan Murphy was mentioned at one time. It looked like Jim Mallander became the favourite, and then he turned them down.
They've obviously scoured the universe they have, because they've got him from Japan.
In the second tier.
Yeah, Honda Heat.
Hey?
Well, that's the team he's the coach of in Japan. Right. Honda Heat. I like that name.
Yeah. Nice. You've got one of those cars, haven't you?
No, I haven't. No. I've got a Jeep.
Civic.
What?
Honda Civic.
Yeah. No, he says here that Richard Holland, who's the chief executive of Cardiff Blues, I believe John will be the perfect fit for Cardiff Blues. He has an abundance of experience and a track record of bringing through young talent, which was very appealing given the age profile of our squad. What he's actually saying is we haven't got a lot of money and we're going to have to build from the ground up, which is fair enough.
And what we're actually saying is we haven't got a clue about him, so we can't really say whether he's going to be a good coach.
No, I don't think we can be any more generic in our appraisal of his signing.
Well done.
Thank you. Well done, John. And good luck coming over from Honda Heat. Okay, that's enough news for one week, I think. It's a good place to end, if anywhere. Let's get down to the elephant in the room. England losing three games in the Six Nations and finishing fifth.
Fifth. Worst for 30, how many years? 35 years, something like that?
Yeah, probably worst, yeah.
Well, worst in the Six Nations ever, because last time they finished fifth, they were last. It was not great. Go on then, where did they go wrong? How long have we got?
Well, I don't think that I obviously watched the game, and I knew after 5 minutes they were losing the game, as I'm sure most experienced internationals did. They lost the contact, they physically got dominated. They got destroyed. I thought the first try was a knock-on, and I'm surprised they didn't come back and look at it at all, because I thought it hit Keane's hand. That aside, Ireland were amazing. England were terrible. So if we just concentrate on England for the minute, I heard Dylan Hartley say something after the game which infuriated me in his Five Live interview. He said he was asked by...
Chris Jones,
yeah, nice guy. He said he asked him what was going on.
He'll be delighted with that appraisal from you.
Yeah, well, fine, okay. He asked him a question about what people thought of what was going on, and Dylan Hartley said, we don't care what anyone else thinks. We're just going to appraise the game, appraise our performance, and then we'll change things. And I thought to myself, maybe you should care, Dylan, because very soon you'll be like one of us and just a fan of England. And I don't get that sense that there's an involvement from everyone. And his leadership
funny
is...
funny, because that's exactly the sort of thing you would have said.
No, I wouldn't, because I wasn't the captain, so I would never have been interviewed after a loss like that.
I agree. It's very difficult. And you know, Dylan isn't the best, which isn't necessarily, apart from upsetting you, not a huge negative for an England captain. I know someone that wasn't particularly good at, you know, fluffy answers, who was an England captain, but he was quite good. But sometimes it's difficult after the game. You just want to go through your media duties and actually not give away too much. You don't want to, you know, you don't want to open everything up to the media. What's the point in doing that? He's right in some respects that you've got to sort the problems out internally. I think that the one of the difficulties for England is he is not necessarily playing the best as a hooker, but they're just so lacking still in the number of leaders that they've got in the team. It was a problem in 2015. It was highlighted that probably the only real leaders were Ford and Farrell, who were two really young kids, and I'd say that's pretty much still the case. You know,
they're low in leaders.
Yeah,
I think he's got the selection wrong on numerous occasions through the Six Nations. They have had a lot of injuries. I mean, Billy Vunipola, most sides,
he makes a huge difference, particularly with people talk about back row balance, and that's been a major thing. And not having an out and out seven, I don't actually think that's necessarily been the problem, because everyone says, well, we're getting killed at the breakdown, so we need a seven, but we're getting killed on our ball at the breakdown, which, you know, gone are the days of the seven going to every breakdown and securing your own ball.
But that's a style of play.
I totally agree with you.
So the style of play that they implement is they like to go around the corner and they like to bring decoy runners on the front line and then distribute the ball to the back and get to corners. It's so dated that now all defensive sides know how to work and run through the defence.
It's brilliant as long as you don't do it every time. And they see that seems to be the first option. Yep. It's brilliant when those frontline runners are an actual running threat and defenders get sat down. And they've got the playmakers to be able to decide whether to play out the back.
There's only one side in the world that can play that all the time, and that's Wasps. And that's because Danny Cipriani is one of the only guys that can do it.
Even they struggled at the beginning of the season because they didn't have that momentum with those frontline players and they weren't genuine threats. As soon as they sorted that problem out, which perhaps is a good thing for England that was, you know, the likes of Wasps sorted it out very quickly. But I'd agree with you. And there was a lot of fast handling, which I think they've been working on in training camps, like when they went to Portugal and things, that really quick hands to keep the ball away from contact and try and stop that line speed. But the problem is if those guys offloading the ball are getting caught, you then haven't got players getting there quickly enough to clear out to the actual guy that takes it into contact. And that was a big area. The other area at the breakdown I thought was massive was the tacklers. For some reason in rugby at the moment, referees aren't refereeing the tackler on the floor moving away quite as quickly. Now, it's not England got undone by bad refereeing. It's happening to all the teams, but other teams are dealing with it a lot better. And a great example of that I'd give is I watched one weekend with Ireland playing against Scotland. I think England were playing against France. Poirot, the TV detective, he was hanging in around the breakdown looking for clues. But he was hanging in around the breakdown and Danny Kerr was skirting around him, ignoring him, but still getting slowed down. Conor Murray playing in the next game against Scotland. Denton does exactly the same. He straddles him, he trips over him, he starts looking at the referee saying, I'm getting
no
tripped
doubt
over.
That Ireland were a lot more streetwise.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the penalty, they solved Kearney, their own problems.
Kearney got that the croc roll on Elliot Daly, but it wasn't even close to being a croc roll.
They solve their own problems. If someone's stopping them playing the way they want to play, and that's what, you know, particularly at halfback, they've got two brilliant guys. And I think that the great thing about Ireland is what Joe Schmidt's done in terms of that clarity of purpose. Everyone in the Irish squad are on the same page, doing exactly the same things, playing the same way. And maybe it was the knock in confidence against Scotland, but England didn't have that. And that's probably the worry for Eddie Jones. Yes, when you're not confident, you start to hesitate and you start looking for other people. And that hesitation means people aren't running the right lines as aggressively enough. But Ireland looks so much more organised to what they were doing than England did.
It's a much more simple game plan, isn't it? I think Ireland have got, like you said, if everyone knows what they're doing, half the battle's done. There was a period, I think, where England were, they started to attack pretty well. They started to get a good phase continuity, and then they just run out of people, and they end up getting tackled into touch. I think they've got to get their players into better positions. Elliot Daly, obviously, is one of the plus points. Maybe play him at the outside centre where he plays most of his club rugby. The back three needs looking at. Don Armand, again, is a conversation of, you talk about leaders. He's the sort of guy you could get behind. He's a big physical guy, doesn't take a backward step. And well, I think then you've got to start thinking about the front row and what's going to happen there.
Well, on Don Armand, I thought that Allen game was the ideal opportunity to start him, because you needed a close-in ball carrier, someone that could pick and go and get those extra meters. Now, Robshaw and Haskell, brilliant, have been great players for England. They've got all that experience, but we know what they can do. And together, neither of them really is I wouldn't say an outstanding ball carrier. They can both carry. Haskell can run really hard and try and bash a hole, but if you line him up, he's not. He runs in a certain way, doesn't he?
He's not going to worry you, is he?
No.
If you're on the opposition.
Exactly. But if you're already on the front foot, he's got the ability to make a break because he'll run hard and he'll get through.
He reads the game really well, so that part of it takes over the physicality
but
that he likes.
He had an opportunity to put this debate in his own mind to bed once and for all. Is Don Armand a test match animal? Is he a good enough player? And if he'd started him, and then to not bring him on till the 65th minute, when you're in trouble, I just couldn't. I couldn't understand why you didn't have it, particularly when you've got the likes against Ireland. Why would you play Don Armand? Well, because in your previous years, your line-out's been torn apart by Peter Omani, and Don Armand is a similar sort of line-out forward as well, and as good, almost as good, if not as good.
Do you think it's a Jones stubbornness that prevented him from putting him on?
I don't know. I don't understand.
You can't rationalise it.
Can't understand why.
Yeah. Well, I mean, now we're actually starting to hear people saying, you never would have thought this 6 weeks ago. Is Eddie Jones the right man for the job? I mean, that's a stupid question, isn't it?
Yeah, he'll stay in the job.
Until the World Cup.
Regardless of whether he is or not, your best chance of winning a World Cup is with the same guy involved, because the planning for a World Cup, it's people talk about the four-year cycle. It's probably not a four-year cycle, but they do start talking about how you get that intensity up and down for the whole period of the 2 years, and you make sure that players go in as well prepared. To suddenly change that all by bringing someone new in would be disastrous for me. I don't actually mind the fact that they gave him the 2 year extension as well, because I think that is a bit of forward planning, and he is there to bring the new guy in and make sure that that's a really seamless handover.
But do you not think that's then you hand over in his eyes? Maybe you need something fresh, something new. It's like you giving me a job and trying to turn me into you.
I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't give you a job.
Well, you haven't got a business, which helps. So
I
can't.
I have.
I could do your garden.
You haven't got a height.
You haven't do your garden.
Couldn't be me.
Shrubs.
You couldn't be me.
But you know what I mean? You don't want the next guy to be part Eddie Jones. You want him to be his own person.
Yeah, but I don't. I mean, he'll obviously be involved in the process. I don't think it'll be solely down to him who replaces him, but he will be. Have an advisory role.
He wins the World Cup, it will.
Yeah, but he'll have an advisory role to who he brings in. Yeah. But it still will be a RFU board decision, or even the RFU committee decision.
I'm already bored,
actually. We'll have to sign it up. But look.
Is it time to throw the baby out with the
bathwater,
or just say?
It's a 3 or 4 week period, isn't it? I think the worry, and the other thing that's come up in conversation is, can the RFU now centrally contract? Well, they can't until 2024 anyway, because the current agreement's in place. They could potentially go and speak to the Premiership clubs, some of who aren't as flush with money as they'd like to be, and say, look, can we restructure some of those international contracts so that you don't play them as much, but we give you extra compensation in return? That's something that you could look at. But Eddie's also got to take some of the... blame's probably the wrong word, but some of the responsibility that the England players did look tired. Yes, it's the year after a Lions, but and the England players...
Exactly.
The England players have played more than anyone else by
a
country mile.
They have played
mile.
More than anyone else, and then he takes them away and beasts them.
And that's why he's got
to
take responsibility.
So why don't you just take him away and say, let's have a lie down, do you want a pina colada?
Yeah. And so So one of the things that was said when those Lions boys started training was, well, we need to get them back up to speed. We almost, so we'll do extra fitness with them because they've been away with the Lions.
It works well, that.
But
that's the way to get fresher,
but again,
train harder.
That cycling, I know it's gone wrong in the Six Nations, but that cycling might mean that you don't have to work them as hard nearer to the World Cup.
Looking back on the two World Cups that I trained for, went to, I think you can turn up to the World Cup in April, May and prepare yourself as physically well in that period of time. I don't think that how you are now has any relevance whatsoever to how you will be during the World Cup.
Big one. For them, how do they solve this now?
I think you want this summer off. You want your core best players to have the summer off.
Agree.
And you don't take them to South Africa. Or maybe you say you're playing one test.
Yeah, exactly. You play the first test and you can fly home and get on holiday.
And then you go. Yeah. So play the first test and then I'll start testing everybody else in the next two games. You know, particularly, and also it depends how they've gone for their club. Because if they're, say, Saracens get to both finals, currently unlikely, but you could have guys there who are playing really high intensity games all the way through May and then go on three internationals in June, South Africa. That's tough. That's like doing an own your little mini World Cup. But you could have someone from Exeter, or you could have someone from Leicester, or somebody from Newcastle that gets knocked out or doesn't make the top four. And then you go, do you know what? I'm actually going to take more of those guys.
You mentioned Sarri's. I wonder whether there's a little bit of Sarri's performances this year and them losing a little bit of their invincibility, particularly in Europe, which has rubbed off on the England team, because England were based around Saracens and that confidence that all those Saracens players had. And, you know, 2003, Leicester and Wasps were right up there competing in Europe, winning European. You know, that invincibility does rub off on the international team, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think they need an attack coach as well.
Well, that's exactly what I was just about to say.
And you pointed at me at the same time
as we
said attack.
I did point at you.
Yeah. Do I know anyone?
No, you don't. Will Greenwood?
Yeah, I think Will would be pretty good.
No,
clever.
What I was going to say is, aside from the fact that they need an attack coach, it will, in the player's mind, make them feel like they're addressing the problems from the Six Nations, that someone new is coming in with fresh ideas. So I think psychologically it'll make a difference. But I agree, just someone else that can be that attack voice, so that Eddie is still the boss, he's still overseeing it all. But I think someone that gives that enthusiasm just for attack. You've got Paul Gustard doing it for defence, you've got Borthwick doing it for the forwards. Slightly left field, I might go for Daryl Gibson.
Yeah, I saw you wrote that in a newspaper column.
Just because...
Well, that...
I mean, Michael Checker,
I don't know enough
tonight
about him. I think he's, you know, a great guy, but I don't know about
him. Well,
under
Michael Checker, who we've got in today, the Waratahs, he was the attack coach. Waratahs won Super Rugby. As a head coach, they've been playing really expansive stuff. They haven't been winning, partly because their accuracy hasn't been good enough, which could be a reason against it. But I still think you've then got this guy that can push the boundaries of attack, but you've also got someone like, a boss like Eddie that'll keep him in check. But I also would like someone that's not just a young English guy that, so you haven't got just got yes. I'm not saying that these guys are just yes men, but, you know, young coaches,
no more
Eddie
Churchills
must feel like he can control, whereas someone coming in from outside, I'd just like him to challenge him a bit more.
It depends who the person is. Whoever it is, they've got to change the mindset. When was the last time you watched an England international in the last 12 months and they genuinely shocked you by doing something? I think that's the thing. You change their mindset.
Scotland, when they lost.
When they lost, yeah. But genuinely, you watch the game, you go, that was quick, didn't expect that. Oh, quick 22, not seen one of those for 4 years. That sort of thing. Really start to think above the box, and outside of the
below
box.
It, wherever you want to be.
To the side,
to
if
the
you
left,
want.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on. That's what we think about England's performance in the Six Nations. But given that we had the man who was pulled on the England shirt more than anyone else on earth.
And what a struggle it was for him to pull it on.
It was.
The amount of Vaseline we had to go through when they brought the skin tight ones out.
I mean, this guy's so big, he's got, you know, he's got his own gravity. Well, he's in the studio this week, Jason Leonard. Perhaps we should just listen to what he thought of it all.
It's not always the physical tiredness that you're talking about. It sometimes can be the mental as well. It's always going to be a tough ask. You've come out of a full-on season. Some of these guys have been involved in Lions. Into a season again, they've had no pre-season really of any note in that aspect.
straight into another season. So I'm pretty sure some of the players will be tired, that they will be mentally tired as well. But you've got to up your game. We, with 2003, you're talking about where Benny was saying that earlier, we lost games in the build-up to that. We lost a Grand Slam in 99, we lost a Grand Slam in 2000, we lost a Grand Slam in 2001. As long as you learn from those mistakes and become a better player, a better team, that's got to be a good thing. You've got to learn on that process. And hopefully this England team will learn from the games that they've lost in this Six Nations.
As always, a pleasure to hear from Jason. Now, we shouldn't sit and linger on England for too long, should we? As bad as we were, the Irish boys were equally as brilliant. So let's talk about them, Ben. Six Nations and Grand Slam winners, the new number two in the world rankings. I would argue, actually, they're probably closer to number one.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, they won't play the number one team until November, when England will play New Zealand as well. But they got a decent tour coming up in the summer. They're down to Australia, I think, so that's a decent test for them as well. How comfortable they are, it's a bit of a cliche, in their own skin, but they just know exactly what they're going to do. Perhaps the fact that Joe Schmidt's been in situ for a good amount of time. You know, he obviously had the Leinster connection and ran that and then progressed, had a World Cup, made a few, you know, errors. He will say that he didn't get it quite right because they didn't get to where they wanted to. So he will have learnt from that. But just the clarity that team seemed to have. And interestingly enough, Andy Farrell and Stuart Langster even doing things for Irish rugby.
Yeah.
I think Farrell's good.
I don't think we'll let them back into England, will we, though, after the, at least like some embargo for maybe a month or two.
Farrell's good, though, isn't he?
Yeah.
Farrell's good.
How reliant are they on Sexton and Murray? I know Sexton, they've got Carberry coming in, who could also play their huge talent. But if Conor Murray goes...
I think Murray's the best in the world. Not necessarily, you know, someone like Aaron Smith might have a bit more glitzy play to him. But in terms of a nine that manages the game, his box kicking is absolutely superb, which they've built a lot of the foundation of some of their performances over the years on. His speed that he gets the ball into either Sexton or the forward carrier's hands is as quick as anyone. He manages the referee perfectly, not by chomping at him and screaming at him, but because he plays so fast all the time, as soon as it's not coming, the hands come out from going, where is it? I can't see it. And then he looks at the referee, almost like, ref, I can't see the ball, where is it? And the referee gives a penalty. So
yeah, that's my only problem with the Irish team. Brilliant side, great players across the field, but there was an awful lot of play acting going on. There's a lot of screaming, there's a lot of noise. It's working for them. It's getting them where they need to be. I mean, they've won, what, three Six Nations in the last five, and now they've got a Grand Slam. Undoubtedly, one of the favourites for the World Cup.
But Murray controls the agenda of the breakdown because he wants to play so fast. He looks like he's playing so fast all the time that as soon as it's slow and he's looking at the referee without even having to say anything, the referee goes, well, yeah, I can see you want to play quickly and it's not come. Why isn't it coming? Oh, there's an England player there.
Okay. Well, if you are a betting man, and I'm sure if you were in Cheltenham last week and you're Irish, you had a bit of a good week as well, it might be a good time to stick a few quid on those guys.
Keith Earls is worth a mention it sort of
disappeared a little bit.
He'd had that brilliant start to his international career and he was superb.
Yeah. Very physically strong for not the biggest guy. You know, he was putting in some big hits. I think there was one on the far side on... who did he hit? Might have been Haskell.
Which far side? The far side at Twickenham.
The far side at Twickenham, yeah, as opposed to the near side.
Which is the near side? Which side were you on?
Whichever side you're on is the near side.
Okay.
And then the other side is the far side.
Right, got it.
So in this little booth, I'm here on the near side.
No,
and you're over yonder there
on
the far side.
I'm on the near side.
You're on the dark side. That's all we need to know. Okay, moving on from the champions, let's take a quick look at the rest of the nations this year. It was a mixed tournament for Wales. Pretty good for Wales, I think. Scotland could have gone really bad in the last game. France showed signs of recovering. Well, a little bit. Some great tries for a side that hasn't showed that much flair for a number of years. So let's just rattle them through then, shall we? Let's rattle
Wales
on through.
Brilliant Wales. For them, because going into the tournament, they were so worried about the number of injuries they had. But the reason it's brilliant is because they were forced into picking some of the players that Gatland hasn't taken a chance on before, and they all stood up to it, particularly all those Scarlets lads. They showed that they could play a similar style at times when they get the balance right to the Scarlets in international rugby to tear teams apart. But they didn't quite get some of the results they would have wanted, but I think they'll be really happy that it's put them in a better position for the World Cup.
Use 32 players, which is perfect. Yeah. You got to see some new talent and some old talent mixing in. Scotland, for me, something of a bit of a roller coaster for them this year. A bit of a humiliation against Wales. Could have turned really bad against Italy. Italy should have won that game.
I was out of that game. They should have lost.
Yeah, they should have lost. And they just lacked that accuracy that we've seen from Glasgow and for Edinburgh to a certain extent. And the pace in the back line. We didn't see it as much as we did. We saw it in glimpses, particularly against England. But against everyone else, they just couldn't link it together.
I think you're right. It's everything either seems to come off, or some of those passes that Finn Russell threw against England compared to some of the ones he threw against Italy. Obviously, his performance against France as well was well documented. So, yeah, it's just that inconsistency at the moment for them. But equally, we said Italy should have won. Italy are vastly improved from where they were.
Yeah.
It doesn't show because I think everyone else is better. You know, there's no weak team. Well, England are the weakest other team by results because they're fifth in the table. But there's no really weak team like sometimes you get in the Six Nations where Italy might have, in the past, snuck a win.
Now, they're playing good rugby, Italy, as well. We'll get to them in a sec. I think Scotland's first 20 minutes against Wales just set them up for the rest of the tournament. Interception pass, mistake from the kickoff, you lose the game. You know, that they conceivably should have won that first game.
Yeah.
And if they'd not thrown that pass, was it Price who threw it, I think, Ali Price?
Yeah. Well, they'd nearly scored themselves,
hadn't they? They still finished third, which I think is a good return for them. Yeah. France, again, it's like being on a roller coaster with them, isn't it? Apart from Bastereau, oh my God. Imagine being on a roller coaster with him. Wouldn't have much space, would you? Well, if it was a two-seater. He's enormous, that fella.
Yeah.
But he was strong, wasn't he? Over the ball, flipping heck, and they just couldn't bring him down. He became almost the Sebastian Chabal of the French team in the final two games.
Yeah, he was good. France made a stand with their discipline, didn't they?
But it's about time they did.
Those players that had gone out in Scotland and weren't picked again. But yeah, Teddy Thomas was odds on to be, a player of the tournament in the first couple of rounds, wasn't he? But I'm sure they'll reintegrate some of those players back into the team, and maybe a bit like Wales, they've seen what the other guys can do as well.
And really quickly for Italy, I think another wooden spoon, but definite signs of improvement. Their attacking game at times was very, very good. And just the occasional stupid mistake, they've unearthed a few good players.
And they're all youngsters. That was the worry, wasn't it? When Castrogiovanni and all that era started to retire, they know Parise is probably on the way out. We couldn't see these guys coming through. And now some of them were they're absolute stars. In fact, in that Scotland game, their stars were Menozzi, the fullback, Negri, the six, who's made the Opta team of the tournament on stats, Hartbury College, former Hartbury College lad. And they finally gave a debut to Jake Paledri, from Gloucester, who was outstanding on his debut and won Man of the Match.
Yeah. They've got some really good talent coming through Italy, and good luck to them next year. Okay, I think we've spoken about the Six Nations enough now, don't you? Let's just try and forget it ever happened. Shame that it was snowed off. We've had such bad snow. Hopefully they can play it next year. One man, however, who probably won't let the English forget about our last few matches is the Australian head coach, Michael Checker, who joined us in the studio this week. And here are some of his best bits.
Since the last World Cup, we made a conscious decision to, I suppose, change the look of our team. We've had 26 debutants over the last couple of years. We've moved out, some of the senior players that we didn't think would get themselves to the World Cup. And we wanted to get those guys who, in the series we lost to England in 16, those guys who played in that series now have got 30, 35 caps, etc., starting to build our experience around that, and we've got a really good crop of young players coming through. So I'd say that in 18, we're looking to, our big goals will be around playing our best football more consistently. We've played some great footy, but we haven't played it consistently enough. We've had some great wins, New Zealand, on tour against Wales, different wins there, but we haven't been able to produce it regularly, and I think that comes with inexperienced players. So the more experience we get together, the more we're looking to build our consistency. We are lucky because we get to play New Zealand three times a year, That's the way you improve when you play against the best. We want We want to be in that tough, that tough draw, especially this year. I think 18 is a very important year for us to be able to compete at the top level more consistently, not just once or twice and then have one game off. What I also think about it is that, if we're going to build our confidence and self-belief, which is really important for us, we need to be showing ourselves that we've got the depth of player who can go up and compete against these top teams. Yeah, I think obviously we had a lot of issue last year when we cut the team from Super Rugby, and that really hurt us across the board. I think our teams have started in a lot more positive fashion this year. There's always strong support for the Wallabies, There's no doubt about that. But it's not just about the Wallabies, it's about the game as a whole there, the participation in the game, young kids playing and seeing their icons, playing great footy. So I think the mood's changing. Got a new boss as well, so things are on the up.
Big thanks to Michael for coming in this week. Now, moving away from the international game for the foreseeable future, let's look forward to the Aviva Premiership, which returns this weekend. It's been an unpredictable season so far, so who knows what will happen in the final five rounds. Where are you standing on it, Ben? What do you reckon? We've got it coming back this weekend. You're in Bath, aren't you, on Friday?
Yeah, Bath on Friday against Exeter, 7:45 kickoff. That's on BT Sport 1 and 4K UHD from 7 p.m. I think Exeter will finish top of the Premiership, but I'm not sure whether they'll win the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's all open. Saturday, there's loads of games on. London Irish versus Gloucester, 3 p.m. kickoff. Sale versus Worcester, that's a big one for Sale. Again, at 3 p.m. Saracens versus Harlequins, 3 p.m. And that's on BT Sport 1 and 4K UHD. That starts from 2:30 p.m.
That's from the London Stadium, the old Olympic Stadium.
Is it?
First
is that
time rugby.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
That's good.
So I'll be there at that one.
Oh, good. Have a nice trip. That's just around the corner.
From here?
Yeah, not from your house.
Not from my house, though. No.
Yeah, actually, somewhere else, which is not just around the corner from my house, where I'll be, is Newcastle versus Northampton.
Where's that game being played,
That's
Austin?
Being played at St James's Park.
Oh, isn't that where the football team play?
That's where the football team play, and it's in Newcastle. And that kicks off at 5:30 p.m. You can find that on BT Sport 1 and 4K UHD. Coverage starts from 5:15 p.m. But then the big one, the one that is going to have a huge impact on who finishes fourth, Sunday, Leicester versus Wasps, 3 p.m. kickoff, BT Sport 1 and 4K UHD. I'll be joined by Lawrence Dallaglio, who will try and contain himself if Wasps win. And that's on 2:30 p.m.
It's a massive game, is it? Both sides got a couple of quite key injuries, particularly in the back row in terms of ball carrying. Nathan Hughes, obviously, out. Leicester are without Brendan O'Connor, who's been playing really well for them and giving them a bit of go forward.
What's he done?
Mike Williams is out as well. A rib problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you disguise that well.
No, so it is a rib problem.
He's hurt his knee.
It's a rib problem.
What, did he have a bad rib? Barbecue or?
Yes.
Salt and pepper are my favourites.
Chilli salt. All right.
Oh, yeah, chilli salt. But sometimes they can deep fry him too much and then
shut
they get
up.
A bit.
Shut up. Just finish
Let's
the
go on with it, shall we? Okay, thanks for listening to the Rugby Tonight podcast. We'll be back in the studio and on BT Sport as well as right here on the pod. So make sure you hit the subscribe button to get it delivered to your device every Thursday morning. And if you've enjoyed listening, please give me a 5-star rating and a 1 for Ben. Thanks very much.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.